This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
This week on Radio EcoShock, Joe Rome
set the all-time record for the hottest summer for any state in both Texas and Oklahoma, blowing out the record that had been set during the Dust Bowl era.
Jeff Masters.
Fasten your seatbelts, we're in for a wild ride.
A bit of ABC News.
Today in Pass Christiane, Mississippi, they're already spraying for mosquitoes. There was no winter frost to kill their eggs.
Raymond DeYoung.
You begin to realize that we're not going to have to get people to consume less resources. They're going to be consuming less resources, whether they're ready or not.
And climate scientists.
A clean coal lobbyist?
No!
A cashed up alarmist?
No!
A climate scientist? Yo!
You asked for it. It's 2012, and my email box is filled with listeners saying, what the heck is going on with summer in March? They're in their bathing suits, on the beach, in the Maritimes, on the Great Lakes, and down the East Coast. I'll ask the experts, Joe Rome from Climate Progress and Jeff Masters from the Weather Underground. Then we visit with Professor Raymond DeYoung. What state of mind do you need to cope when the future rolls in much too fast?
Radio EcoShock.
When we get exciting weather, it's hard to beat the Dr. Jeff Masters blog at the Weather Underground. Jeff has taught meteorology, he's been a hurricane hunter for NOAA, and he still watches storms and all forms of strange weather. Jeff, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex.
I just love your blog, and especially your recent post on the temperature record set this March. We have listeners all over the U.S. and Canada, so go ahead. Can you give us some of the highlights measured around North America?
Yeah, this heat wave, I hesitate to call it a heat wave because it was just warm, but relative to average, the U.S. and Canada have never seen an event this extreme. The records that were not only broken but smashed, it just boggled my mind. I mean, we had a couple temperature records smashed by 30 degrees. I mean, these are records that had stood for over 50 years. It's hard enough to break a record by, say, 10 degrees, but that was commonplace during this heat event. And a lot of places were breaking by more than 20 degrees, and like I said, a few 30-degree records. And on top of that, not only did some locations set records for the hottest March temperature, but those records in March were breaking the April record for heat. So really an unusually hot spell of weather we had, and incredibly long-lasting. I mean, we had some stations that went 9 or 10 days in a row breaking the all-time record for that particular date, and that's extremely unusual to get that kind of a long run of record-breaking heat.
And some of the low temperatures beat the previous highs for that date, I understand?
Yeah, that's right. We did see a couple cases where at midnight, these stations were breaking their previous record high for the date. And not only that, but it stayed warm enough for the entire day that they ended up where their low temperature was setting the mark for a new record high. So four stations I saw do that.
Are there any particular places that stick out in your mind?
The one that boggled my mind the most was in Canada, in Nova Scotia. They had a station there that broke their previous record for the date by 33.5 degrees Fahrenheit, which is just pretty unimaginable. I mean, it got up to 85 degrees there, and it had never been above the low 50s there before. So extremely unusual heat wave.
Well, you know, I resisted covering this story just because I don't like to confuse weather with long-term climate change, but I did get dozens of emails from listeners saying, what is going on, including one from an iPhone on a beach in Nova Scotia. They're out there with their bathing suits, you know? Crazy stuff.
Yeah, that is crazy stuff. This was summer. I mean, you talk about the average highs in summer, and for a period of about a week, we had summer-like temperatures over a huge portion of both the U.S. and Canada.
And you also gave your blog readers the big picture impacts of what you called summer in March 2012. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, if you're looking for impacts for this sort of unusual weather event, there are both positive and negative impacts. Now, obviously, for positive impacts, we had a savings in money as far as heating costs go. although I was running my air conditioner here in Michigan, which I'm ashamed to admit here in March. A lot of savings on snow removal, savings because not as many people were crashing their cars on icy roads. So I think it was probably a net benefit to the economy to have this nice stretch of warm weather. But if you want to look at the negative side, we've got a situation here in Michigan tonight where we're going to get a freeze, and we're going to get an even deeper freeze tomorrow night. The growing season has started here 5 weeks early, and there are a large number of fruit trees, particularly apples and cherries, that are in full bloom right now, and we're expecting widespread damage to these fruit crops. When you freeze off the buds on these trees, they can't generate fruit that year. So I would expect we're going to see at least a 50% loss in fruit in a lot of affected orchards here, not only in Michigan, but Ohio is looking at a bad crop of apples because their trees are in full bloom, and some of the surrounding areas as well.
And then you've got those soils that should have a lot of snow on them to produce the moisture when you want to do the planting, and it's not there. I don't know what's going to happen for the planting season this year.
Yeah. The other thing to consider is the longer-term effects of this sort of unusual warmth. The soils are quite dry now over a large portion of the upper Midwest. The entire state of Minnesota is under moderate to severe drought, although that was in place before this warm spell happened. But we've lost all of our snow cover weeks or even months early, which means that the soils are going to dry out much earlier than usual. We're going to be looking at potential shortfalls in irrigation water because the rivers are already at low flow levels, and they'll get even lower probably this summer. And you're increasing your chances of drought. When you've got this sort of early dry out, the soils don't act to cool the air above them so much because there's not as much moisture available. So we are definitely on the watch this summer for an increased chance of drought.
Well, maybe this year for once we won't have all the flooding stories down through the Midwest.
Yeah, well, that's the flip side of it. For the first time in 4 years, we're not expecting major snowmelt flooding on the Mississippi River or the Missouri River. I mean, last year at this time, there was still about equivalent of a foot of water on the ground in the form of snow up in the upper Midwest. And, well, that's completely gone now, and there isn't going to be major flooding. But the other problem, which will happen on those rivers probably, is they'll have trouble with the barges because the rivers will be so low that you can't run the barges. The navigation will be impacted by low water levels.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith talking weird March weather with expert Dr. Jeff Masters, who blogs at wonderground.com. Jeff, if we take climate change out of the equation, how would a meteorologist explain what people just experienced in most of North America?
We saw a situation where we had a ridge of high pressure move in over the eastern half of North America, and there were at least three natural causes for that. We've got a lot of patterns in the atmosphere that go by various fancy names. You've probably heard of La Nina. Well, that's an unusual cooling of the ocean temperatures off the coast of Peru. That helps create high pressure over the eastern part of North America this time of year. And in combination, there are a couple other patterns. So one is a pattern of Arctic winds that we call the North Atlantic Oscillation. And that was also happening to be in a phase where it favored high pressure over the eastern part of North America. And yet a third pattern of tropical thunderstorm activity called the Madden-Julian Oscillation was also enhancing these two patterns. And so these three different effects all came together and happened to create unusual high pressure over the eastern U.S. And those sorts of patterns do happen naturally, and we'd expect every, 50 years or so, we'd see these kinds of situations come together to make an unusually long-lasting and intense ridge of high pressure like we observed.
Do you think this start of 2012 tells us anything about the upcoming hurricane season or expectations of tornadoes?
No, we really don't know what that will hold in store for us this year. You really can't predict the long-range weather patterns more than a week or two in advance. And we can look at the ocean temperatures because they have a long memory. They go, months where they'll be influencing the weather. And we do see, for instance, in the Caribbean and then the tropical Atlantic, the ocean temperatures there are pretty close to average. which is quite striking because since 1995, that has not been the case. So it's looking like this year, probably hurricane season won't be as big a deal as we've been used to seeing since 1995 when those ocean temperatures have been quite warm.
All right. Well, on the question of whether this could be a signal of climate change, you referred readers to an article by Andrew Friedman of Climate Central. His piece was called Global Warming May Have Fueled March Heat Wave Odds. And that's what Dr. James Hansen of NASA has been saying. We wouldn't see these extreme heat events so often without those greenhouse gases we've been adding. What do you think?
Yeah, it's really hard to have this sort of off-the-charts anomalous heat without a warming climate. I mean, if you take the climate of the 20th century and you crunch the statistics where you take the average and then you look at how far the weather varies around that average, which we call the standard deviation, you can come up with some odds of, well, how likely is a type of one-week weather event like we saw, you know, to happen? And basically, it would not have happened in the climate of the 20th century. But now, if you talk about, okay, well, let's warm the average temperature by a degree or so Fahrenheit over land, now what are the odds? Well, 1 degree may not seem like a lot, but it really shifts the odds dramatically for extreme events, those 1 in 50-year events like I'm talking about. Those get about perhaps 3 times more likely. So that's why I say I don't think we would have seen this sort of dramatic heat event in the old climate, but it's much more probable in the new climate.
And also at wonderground.com, your weather historian Christopher C. Burt posted some neat graphics and a thorough listing of those heat records. I suppose our listeners from the Midwest or New England or even Eastern Canada can find the new and old records all listed there, can they?
Yeah, that's right. Although Chris had to apologize to me. He said, you know, I just got overwhelmed. I got burned out on records. And, you know, that's what I love is following weather records. There were just so many. This event was just so widespread and intense and so long that it was really impossible to get a handle on this and summarize everything that was significant and worth reporting. But he and I have both done our best. I mean, we picked out some of the highlights, and it just remains, he called it, it's almost like science fiction. I mean, the way we were beating these records, and I just saw a nice stat talking today at the Chicago Weather Service, that this would now rank as the 3rd warmest April on record, what we have going so far in March. So the heat is still not as intense, but still notable. I mean, we're talking the high temperatures are 10 to 20 degrees above average over a significant part of the country still in the coming week. So it'll be very interesting to see when the final stats are released for March, how far above average March was. And I'm expecting that we'll see a few states that broke the previous record for March by the greatest margin we've ever seen for any month. In other words, you know, you subtract off this March versus the previous record March, and it'll be like 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And I doubt we've ever seen a state break a previous record by that great a margin.
And I know, Jeff Masters, that we've talked about the number of TV weathermen who never say the words climate change or global warming when they're reporting on all these things. How do you think the media did handling this one?
You know, I didn't really see the media talking about this very much at all. It was pretty much ignored, and that was a little bit of a surprise to me, but I guess it shouldn't be because it didn't have that much of an adverse impact. If you get this kind of a heat wave in summer, at least relative to average, it will have a huge impact. I mean, it would have killed tens of thousands of people. But the fact it happened in March, we were fairly lucky. I mean, a heat wave in March is relatively a good thing unless you happen to be a fruit farmer. So didn't get a lot of attention, which disappointed me some, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
But at least the common person noticed this, and they must be developing the feeling that there's something wrong with the weather and the climate, I'm hoping.
Well, it wasn't the first one of these sorts of events we've had. I mean, the weather has just been off-scale crazy in the U.S. the past 2 years. So just the combination of all these events back-to-back should leave one wondering that, hey, this isn't the climate I grew up with. And in fact, that's a phrase I used in one of my blog posts a week and a half ago when I was talking about the incredible early season tornado we had here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We had the earliest EF3 or stronger tornado in Michigan history that damaged about 100 homes near Ann Arbor. So, Yeah, this is not the atmosphere that we grew up with. This is a new changed atmosphere. It's got more heat in it. It's got more moisture in it. And that's going to cause some significant effects.
Well, as we finish up, Jeff, is there anything that you would like to add for our listeners?
Fasten your seatbelts. We're in for a wild ride. And, you know, this summer, who knows what's going to happen, but I'm anticipating a hot and dry summer could set new records. I don't know. Another roll of the dice. The dice have certainly been coming up pretty wild in the last 2 years, and I don't see us getting off that roller coaster quite yet.
We've been talking with Dr. Jeff Masters. He co-founded the Weather Underground in 1995, and his blog at wonderground.com is one of the net's high traffic sites. Give it a look. Jeff, thank you so much for helping us out again.
Okay, Alex, thank you.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Summer in March. Is it a preview of global warming? Our guest has a PhD in physics from MIT. He was a top advisor for energy efficiency and renewables in the Clinton administration. Joe Rome is author of the book Hell and High Water, but many of us know him as the world's best climate blogger over at thinkprogress.org. Joe, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's so good to have your advice. You know, the recent March heat wave in North America, and it was even in Britain, it's hard to find words. How would you describe it?
Well, I think it is, as one meteorologist said, a really unprecedented event in all of U.S. weather history since records began almost 130 years ago. I don't think there's been anything like it. There's certainly never been a heat wave like it. You know, I will say it bears the hallmarks of what scientists have been saying global warming would do, because it was very broad. It covered a very large fraction of the United States. It was very long-lasting. It wasn't just a day or two, and it appears to have broken 7,000 high-temperature records over a period of about 10 days. And it didn't just break records, but, I mean, it just blew them away, and we can go through some of those.
Well, the National Weather Service office in Chicago called the heat spell historic, but then said, quote, it's unlikely to be matched in our lifetime. And I thought, well, that's way off base. In the coming decades, this might be exactly what we see again and again. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's surprising. There's no question that the planet is warming and that humans are the primary cause. And there was a major analysis by the National Center for Atmospheric Research which said that if we weren't warming the planet on a given day or week or month or year, you would expect new heat records and new cold records to be the same. The ratio of them would be 1-to-1. In the last decade, heat records outnumbered cold records by 2-to-1. This heat wave, it was 35-to-1. I mean, really quite off the charts. And for the year to date, it was 20-to-1, 20 new heat records for every cold record. And that is, in fact, the average that's expected under global warming scenarios in about 3 or 4 decades. So this kind of heat wave is going to become, I think, pretty much the norm over the next few decades. And ultimately, in the second half of the century, which my 5-year-old daughter, you know, hopefully will live to see, this will be unremarkable and things will be considerably worse. And the last point I'd make is, you know, spring heat waves are not the ones that are devastating. It is the summer heat waves, obviously, because then you're building the temperatures on top of already hot temperatures. And, of course, last summer we saw the brutal heat on top of drought set the all-time record for the hottest summer for any state in both Texas and Oklahoma, blowing out the record that had been set during the Dust Bowl era by over 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, I just think there's no question that we're going to see more and more of this, and it's unfortunately going to be pretty serious for a lot of people.
Yes, and I just read that the lost agricultural products, the cost of that has been raised from $5 billion to over $7 billion. Do you think this year's unusual burst of spring heat could affect crops or gardens?
Well, here in Washington, D.C., we've had the cherry blossoms bloom early, and you know, blooming early would be a risk to plants, obviously, if there was going to be a cold snap. It doesn't look like there's a cold snap in the forecast. But what it has done is set up wildfire conditions all across the country, and you know, pretty much in over a dozen states, we're already seeing a wildfire season kick in. So the head of the Forest Service said last year that global warming was extending the wildfire season, and that's what his scientists have said it was due to global warming. I think it's kind of obvious that when it gets warmer, that evaporates moisture, and dry areas get drier, and that is what creates the conditions for wildfires. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, there are some pretty serious drought conditions in a lot of places across the country, from the southeast all the way over to the west.
Well, you raised the big question that many of us are asking ourselves. Was this March heat wave caused by global warming? What are you hearing from the experts?
Well, you know, we've had Stu Ostro, who is the Weather Channel meteorologist, you know, he said that he didn't think there was any question that global warming was playing a role here. I mean, I want to be clear here that what causes the kinds of once-in-several-hundred-year extreme events like we're seeing now are a combination of the natural variability and then global warming on top of it. The analogy that people have used is it's like a baseball player on steroids. And so, you know, they start hitting further home runs and more home runs because they're now getting just over the balls that were being caught in the outfield now get over the fence. So the global warming shifts the extremes and makes these kind of extreme events far more probable. We are going to have to wait for an official analysis, which I'm sure we will get over the course of this year, as to, you know, how much global warming increased the probability of this event. But I will say that Weather Channel meteorologist Ostro said that while natural factors are contributing to this warm spell, given the nature of it and the context and the other extreme events and patterns in recent years, quote, there is a high probability that global warming is having an influence upon its extremity. And this was the same point that meteorologist Dr. Jeff Masters of the Weather Underground made. It is highly unlikely the warmth of the current summer and March heat wave could have occurred unless the climate was warming. So, and Kevin Trenberth, one of the country's top climatologists, has a study, which I'm now going to post shortly, on climate progress, a paper in which he basically says that global warming has simply is now influencing and affecting all weather because it is heating up the planet and putting more water vapor into the air, and that is creating more intense heat waves and more intense deluges and deeper and worse droughts. So, you know, I think there's no question that this is the kind of heat wave people have expected and that it's far less likely that anything like this would have happened without global warming.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and our guest is leading climate blogger Joe Rome, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Joe, we all have news images that stick in our minds. For me, it was a farmer in the wheat belt looking over a bare field that should have been several feet deep with snow. He worried it would be too dry to plant wheat this year. Was there something that really hit home with you?
Well, I think for me, it was a couple of different things. I think these records, you know, when I started seeing that there were multiple places during this heat wave where the lowest temperature that occurred that day was higher than the all-time high that that place had ever seen. It never got cooler than the all-time high. I mean, that is just unbelievable. There were, you know, in Canada, there were cities that broke their April all-time record for warmth in March. That was one of the unprecedented nature of these records. The other thing for me, and I have written a lot about this, is the droughts, as you mentioned. It is through droughts that most people are going to experience global warming, because it is a very basic prediction of global warming. The hotter it gets, the more evaporation you get, and drier areas are going to get drier. There's also another prediction of global warming that certain areas are just going to see a shift in precipitation. So you'll actually get less precipitation and more evaporation. And we're starting to see that. We're seeing it in a measured way around the Mediterranean, but also now we're starting to see it in the Southwest. And these droughts are very consequential. They are devastating to farmers and to crops, and it's why food prices have been hovering near record levels for over a year now. And as you said, the Texas agronomists have upped the cost to farmers of their recent devastating drought to $7.6 billion. And one of the leading experts in Texas, a member of the Texas Governor's Drought Preparedness Council, said, "No one alive has seen single-year drought damage to this extent." And 2011 was the driest year on record. And so this is going to become the norm, unfortunately, in the coming decades, and people need to plan accordingly. And indeed, you know, part of the reason I write as much as I do is so people can plan and know what's coming, and their families can make decisions, and their children can make decisions, because this is not... Global warming has been portrayed in the media, and especially by the, you know, disinformation campaign, as something that's very far away in time and is mostly going to affect, you know, poor people in Africa. And the fact is, global warming is here and now, and it is affecting Americans, and it is affecting our agricultural system. And I mean, the world developed its agricultural system to support 7 billion people during a period where climate had been quite stable for 10 or 11,000 years within a very narrow temperature band. And people made choices about where to live based on, you know, amount of rainfall and arable land and sea levels. And that's all going to change this century. And quite literally, billions of people are living in places that by the middle of this century are going to be completely untenable in terms of their ability to support agriculture and in terms of sea level rise and other warming impacts are going to evolve, and people need to start planning now.
But, Joe, people like going to the beach much more than they like to have a March blizzard. At first, millions of us are going to love global warming. I wonder if that's going to slow down action to save this livable world.
Well, like I said, I think heat waves in the late winter are not the most serious consequence of global warming. It does have impacts on people because of the wildfire season, the allergy season. I'm sure you know people who, at least down here in the States, the allergy season has kicked in with a vengeance. Up in your neck of the woods, I think the bark beetle, you know, there's a new study that came out that the bark beetle, I had thought, and a lot of people have thought, that the bark beetle was proliferating because the winters weren't cold enough to kill off the larvae. And that's part of it. But it's also the case that because it's warmer year-round, they're now able to have two mating cycles. So you have this effect where you have less winter death, but now more reproduction the other times of year. So, you know, you're certainly right. I mean, I think right now global warming is only beginning to poke through the beast that we are waking up, is just starting to see glimmers of him, and as I'm sure you know and have reported on, you know, we've only warmed a degree Fahrenheit, a degree and a half Fahrenheit in the last half century. We're going to warm five times that this century if we keep on our current path of doing nothing to reduce heat-trapping carbon pollution from coal, oil, and natural gas.
Radio EcoShock will be right back with more from Joe Rome, Raymond DeYoung, and the singing climate scientist.